The Cryptic Code. We're your hosts, Harmon.
And Jessica.
And we like to talk about cryptids, aliens, and generally anything spooky.
And we cuss a little too much.
Indeed. For those joining us, we are now 9 episodes into season 2, putting us already 1 episode ahead of season 1. Even better, we got some new episodes coming out over the next few months, and then we're cracking into our special season finale. That's going to be a big surprise, though. One I'm particularly excited for. However, I don't want to spoil it, so I'm afraid I'll have to leave you all in suspense. Because instead, we have a whole new cryptid on the menu. Today's story is going to take us to the small town of Van Meter, Iowa. And when I say small, I mean small. In 1903, it had a population around 1,000 people. Founded in 1869, nice. And incorporated in 1877, the townspeople made their living either in the local brick factory or the coal mine that stretched 257 feet into the earth, or the countless surrounding farmlands. It was to these farmers one U.G. Griffith sold farming equipment to. Yet it is not his wares we're interested in today, but rather what he saw on the morning of September 29th, 1903. Around 1 a.m., he was heading to town after a successful sale when he noticed a very bright light. At first, he may have thought it to be the morning sun, but it was too intense and too direct. His next conclusion was that it was someone with a spotlight. It could possibly be a kid messing around, or worse, a burglar scouting out potential marks. Okay, I'm not a career criminal or anything, but I think burglars, you know, pretty stealthy guys, right? That's the whole thing, slip in, slip out. You know, just to avoid getting arrested and not waking up the people you're trying to rob by essentially flashbanging them.
Right.
You know, big spotlights aren't exactly incognito. But I digress. The frustrated Griffith went to hopefully apprehend the culprit, but when he came outside, he found that the light was perched upon the roof of a store owned by one Marr and Grigg. It is worth noting that this is the business district of town. Basically, it's Main Street. If this was a burglar, it would be pretty ballsy to pull this in the middle of the town. The light was so bright that his eyes were struggling to see what was behind it. Then suddenly, the light appeared to leap across the street, over the rooftops, and disappear out of sight. At that moment, Griffith knew that it wasn't a searchlight, and it definitely wasn't some kids pulling a prank. But it would not be until later, when the strange light was seen again by others, that he would learn that he was the first to witness the mysterious entity known as the Van Meter Visitor. So, Jessica, first impressions. I know it's not a lot to go on, but that's why I wanted to ask. You see, I think this is going to take quite a turn from what one might be expecting, but so far, first impressions.
So far, we have a light monster.
Yeah.
Like, he's made of light, maybe?
Yeah, what's his name? Electro, yes, simplest name, fucking forgot it, from the Spider-Mans.
You know, I'm curious to see where this goes, for sure, because so far we have light monster, and we have Marr and Grigg. And I want to know if Marr and Grigg come back into play, or if that story... No, they don't?
No.
No, I want to know more about Marr and Grigg. They have the weirdest names ever.
I like to imagine they're boyfriends.
I hope.
That's my cryptic code headcanon.
They're brothers. They've just lived together their entire lives and have different last names.
Oh my god, they're roommates.
And they weren't roommates.
We wouldn't have to wait long for another sighting, though. Around the same time the next night, the town's doctor, Dr. Alcott, was sleeping in his office when he was woken by the same intense light. He then grabbed his shotgun and ran outside to confront the light's source. Before going further, I do want to say I'm a little concerned that the town doctor is not only sleeping in his office, which is typically a bad sign of, like, life-work balance, but that he's sleeping there in his office
with a shotgun.
With a gun.
This is a common theme, though, I feel like we see, is, like, somebody always grabs a shotgun. Every cryptid we cover, somebody grabs a shotgun.
I don't know what was going on before the visitor arrived, But I'm very concerned for Dr. Alcott. I feel like it is something to be concerned about.
So he's going to shoot at this ball of light.
Regardless, the good doctor... Oh, did I interrupt? Sorry.
No, you're good.
Regardless, the good doctor ran out to the streets, very much intending to do no harm right into a motherfucker's face. Shoot him. That's why.
Yeah.
But then he saw it. The glow was not from some searchlight like Griffith suspected, but was coming from a living creature. A massive monster about 8 feet tall stood atop the ledge of a business. Alcott would describe it as having bat-like wings, a beak, and a horn on the crown of its head that was emitting the powerful light. Terrified and confused at just what he was looking at, he leveled his shotgun with shaking hands and fired 5 shots directly into the thing. But the creature didn't react at all. The bullets did not seem to even faze it. Realizing he'd done fucked up, Alcott turned and ran back into his office.
Of course, he was afraid. Dr. Alcott couldn't take what he was dishing out. So far it sounds like we have a pterodactyl made of light.
I think that's in the new Jurassic Park, isn't it?
With Chris Pratt?
Chris Pratt?
Maybe. I don't know.
I haven't seen it.
And I haven't either.
Looking at the box office, I don't think anyone did.
Doesn't seem like it.
No.
Would it make $250? That's not even a whole ticket. That's like somebody bought a hot dog and they put it under that movie.
Not everything can be Morbius. After this, the town was abuzz with talk of the monster. We even have a few newspaper articles. I have one here from the October 11th issue of the St. Paul Globe, if you wouldn't mind giving it a read. Let me pull it up. First, don't fuck this up, Future Harmon. You're going to have to edit this shit out.
Post the Raw podcast. No edits.
The Raw podcast.
The Raw.
The Cryptic Code does it raw up in this.
Ew.
Edit that out, Harmon. Okay, if you don't mind reading the title, the subtitle, and the first 2 paragraphs. First 3, if you don't mind.
A winged monster. Creature emitting a dazzling light. Terrifies Hawkeyes. What? Okay.
They're going after the Avengers.
Des Moines, Iowa. October 10th, the town of Van Meter, containing 1,000 persons, is terribly wrought up by what is described as a horrible monster. Every man, woman, and child in the town is in a state of terror, and fully half of them fail to close their...
I think so.
Is that an I?
Like they're not sleeping? Fail to close their eyes?
Okay, and fully half of them fail to close their eyes in a slumber except in broad daylight. This is not off to a good start. The monster put in its appearance Monday night. U.G. Griffith, an implement dealer, drove into a town at 1 a.m., saw what seemed to be an electric searchlight on Marr and Griggs' store. While he gazed, it sailed across to another building and then disappeared. His story was not believed the next day, but the following night, Dr. A.C. Olcott, who sleeps in his office on the principal street...
Everyone knows he has depression.
Like, even the newspaper knows he sleeps in his office. Who sleeps in his office on Principal Street was awakened by a bright light shining in his face. He grabbed his shotgun and ran outside the building where he saw the monster, seemingly half human and half beast, with great bat-like wings. A dazzling light that fairly blinded him came from a blunt, horn-like protuberance. This does not sound like a word I can pronounce correctly. Protuberance. Is it like hyphenated, you know, where it like switches?
Oh, well, we read past the paragraph anyway, so don't worry about
it. Okay, cool.
I do love that the newspaper just called him out for sleeping in his office, like the newspaper print. And Dr. Alcott, who hasn't slept in the same bed as his wife for 3 weeks now.
Do you think they're getting divorced?
More than likely.
Do you think they're just fighting? Do you think they looked at their children and they're like, honey, daddy's gonna go stay in his office for a few days. Mommy's pissed off.
That makes the shotgun all the more concerning.
Yeah. Why does he have his shotgun in his office?
In case your health insurance declines.
What kind of patients is this man seeing? Is he like, oh, I'm sorry, sir, you have cancer. It's 1903, so we can't do jack shit for that. Let me put you out of your misery in the backyard.
Well, we got two options. I can either give you some experimental medicine, or I can take you out behind the shed and tell you about the fucking rabbits.
I can give you chocolate-coated arsenic, or I can kill you now and save you the trouble.
Why did you voice him like a James Bond villain?
I don't know. I feel like he is a James Bond villain. He's sleeping in his office with a shotgun.
True. By this point, the town was well aware of the creature's presence. So much so that a local banker, one Clarence Dunn, took it upon himself to act as a night watchman for his place of business. He didn't buy into the idea of monsters, though. As far as he was concerned, all his confusion was the work of creative burglars and the overactive imagination of some townsfolk. If there was a gang of thieves roaming the town, it seemed logical to assume the bank would be their next big target. Thus, armed with his trusty shotgun, because I guess they just fucking give it to you as soon as you move in, right?
Apparently.
He spent the next night perched up in the bank.
Okay, so now we have two people sleeping at their places of employment with shotguns. In a town with less than 1,000 people in it. This percentage is a little too high for me.
It is the Midwest, though.
Yeah, it is the Midwest.
The trap had been set, and the visitor would soon come calling. Again, around 1 a.m., Clarence heard what he described as a, quote, strangling noise, end quote, from out in the street. He clutched his gun, having only seconds to prepare before he was blasted with a ray of immense light through the window. The light seemed almost like it was searching through a bank, perhaps noting his presence. It went out once, then quickly came back, finally focusing on Clarence himself. Even through the blinding light, he could make out the outline of a figure behind it. Swinging his gun around, he took aim and bang! The thunder and crack boomed throughout the bank lobby, followed by the sound of shattering glass. He must have felt like a real Clarence Dunce, though, when he realized there was no body. Just as with the doctor, the bullet seemingly had no effect. The evening was not entirely fruitless, though. In the morning, he discovered footprints left where he had seen the creature. He even made plaster molds of them that sadly had not been found. They've mysteriously gone missing.
Of course.
Yeah. Oh, very convenient, but we'll get to that. Because of this, I can only provide scant details, such as the feet only had 3 toes. So it seems like your pterodactyl idea was kind of close. And it sounds like the feet are lined up too. Pterodactyls have 3 feet, right? 3 talons?
I don't know. This is something I think I will have to make a Google about. Pterodactyl feet. I'm sure that's gonna give me some really interesting results. Okay, yeah, it does look like pterodactyls would only have 3 toes. Potentially 4. I don't know. I guess maybe the pterodactyl made of light is a decent theory. Also, this is a little different than some of the other cryptids we've discussed, because this one has shown up 3 nights in a row now.
Yeah, around the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. That's strange.
Yeah.
Most of them you wait 30 years to see them again.
And this one's just kind of, and it's not, it doesn't seem like it's doing anything. It's just kind of vibing.
He's just there, yeah. He's not hurting anybody. I mean, you probably are pissing him off by shooting at him every time he comes around, but
I don't know. It seems like he doesn't really give a shit.
I mean, he does keep coming back, so.
This encounter only served to heighten the town's fears. No one slept soundly. Those who even attempted made sure to have a firearm well within reach, which apparently was already fucking policy, but right, whatever. Such was the case with our next witness. The next night, so October 2nd, I believe, if my math is lining up, O.V. White was asleep in his apartment above his hardware store when he heard an oddly metallic sound outside. White cautiously pulled back his window curtain and saw something that terrified him. The Van Meter visitor was right outside. It sat perched upon a telephone pole. Suppressing his panic, he noticed that the creature did not react to him. and actually instead appeared to be asleep.
Okay, but this is a third person sleeping at their place of business.
Well, to be fair, his apartment is above his place of business.
Okay, but still, it's just, who wants to be that close to their job?
Well, I guess if you own the place, you might as well.
I guess.
And just the fact that his last name is White, I want y'all to know I'm picturing this as Walter White from Breaking Bad. Did you know he got a statue in, where's the series set, like Milwaukee?
I don't know, I've never seen it.
Oh, okay. It's just like Lost or The Fog. We don't watch anything.
No.
This was his chance. White took his time lining up the first shot, knowing full well he probably wouldn't get a second. With the sight settled on the beast, he knew he couldn't miss. And he didn't. The bullet flew through the air and struck the creature directly, only to bounce right off. The visitor began to shake awake, probably more pissed off than hurt. I can only imagine the absolute terror of thinking you definitely had this thing, only to realize it is about to wreck your shit. And wreck shit it did. The visitor released a foul odor that was so intense it actually knocked White out. He just fell unconscious.
Okay, so we have a pterodactyl made of light that emits mustard gas.
Took a really bad fart. We have no proof.
He shot it. He scared the shit out of it.
Didn't. I hate it here. Fortunately, White wasn't the only witness that night, as the commotion had woken up his neighbor, one Sidney Gregg. When he came to investigate, he watched as the creature, quote, descended the telephone pole after the manner of a parrot, using its huge beak, end quote, says Kevin Lee Nelson, an author on a book about the Van Meer visitor, in an interview with thebigfootdiaries.com. I've been to some weird websites, don't judge me. Just wanted to use an exact quote because honestly I'm having trouble visualizing it. Now on the street, the visitor activated its light and looked around before abruptly flying off. Gregg recognized it as heading in the direction of a coal mine, which had actually long since been abandoned. So this is the first time the creature's actually like fought back.
So it's a dragon.
Oh, that's a good thing.
It lives in a coal mine. It's made of light. It has like pterodactyl feet and bullets bounce off of it. It's like, it's a dragon. Maybe there's something good in that mine other than coal. He's protecting it. Like Smaug.
Smaug,
whatever his name is from The Hobbit. He's in The Hobbit, right? Not Lord, yeah.
13 dwarves are gonna come fuck him up. There's 13 dwarves, right? Were there more? Were there less?
13 dwarves and Bilbo.
Bilbo. And occasionally Gandalf, but he ran off every once in a while.
Gandalf always left when shit got hard, bro.
Especially that one time he fucking died.
Oh my god, Jesus.
Now, this mine seems to be where the creature set up shop. Locals nearby would note odd, unnerving sounds echoing through the mine shaft at night. One frightened resident described it as, quote, though Satan and a regiment of imps were coming forth for a battle, end quote.
Well, the devil went down to George.
It came up to Iowa.
Yeah.
Their panic only grew when a few unfortunate witnesses glimpsed the visitor actually emerging from the mine shaft with a second creature. It was practically identical, with the only notable difference being its slightly smaller stature. Suddenly, the pair spread their wings and took flight, disappearing into the night air. The locals conclude that the mine was the creature's home and that eventually it would return. The locals conclude that the mine was the monster's home and that eventually it would return. So, now knowing where the visitor lived, the people of Van Meter fell into the tried and true tradition of small towns besieged by paranormal pests. They formed an angry mob! With a gumption rarely seen outside of pissed off peasants in a Frankenstein movie, the crowd set up an ambush around the mine. Each man was armed to the teeth. Yeah, bullets had proved unable to fell the beast, but surely with just enough raw firepower, they could strike the visitor down. Have you ever noticed in modern horror movies, a lot of problems could be solved if people just made an angry mob?
No, they tried that in Halloween Kills.
Okay, here's the thing though. In my opinion, the angry mob failed because only one of them brought a gun.
Yeah, but I mean, they gave Michael a pretty good beating.
A pretty good whacking. A
pretty good whack.
And you can see one of them brought a fucking laundry iron.
Yeah. That was a weird movie, wasn't it?
Yeah. I liked it.
But now, I understand the angry mob, but also they're all armed with guns, and we've already learned that the creature just, like, seems to deflect bullets and send them back to you. I feel like they're going to try and kill this thing, and they're actually just going to all kill each other.
That is a very real possibility. I guess I'm with the logic of, like, what else are they going to do? Really, guns are your one-trick pony.
Leave him alone. But he hasn't hurt anyone. Why are they so upset with him?
Because it's weird and different.
I'm weird and different. So kill me, Harmon.
No, I can't find another co-host.
Fuck.
In time, they could see the glow of the sun rises, stretching shine. The sun was rising. Yet, in the brilliant orange of the sun's ascension, they could make out two black dots. The visitors had returned. "Let him have it!" one man screamed, his command soon drowned out in a cacophony of thundering firepower. Hot lead filled the air along with discarded brass chambers, yet the beast came on still. They did not waver in the face of the rifles, the shotguns, or anything the men could throw at it. Suddenly, each man's stomach dropped with that sinking sensation of despair. They were helpless to stop the visitors. Panic broke out as the once determined mob began to scatter for cover. Terror that only worsened as the visitors released the same odor that made O.V. White pass out. But rather than flying down the frying men for a feast, the creature simply returned into the mineshaft.
Okay, so they pissed him off again. He mustard gassed all these people. And now they're like, okay, I guess we should leave it alone now. Let's go. They're like, ah, fuck, we're not gonna kill it tonight.
No, you're giving them way too much credit. Peace is not an option. Peace was never an option.
God, this reminds me, there's a stupid, like, Germa stream where they're making fun of the Saw movies, and they're like, "And if you don't do this in under a minute, gas will fill the room. This isn't regular gas, it's sewer gas. It stinks."
Wait, what was this?
I don't know. Germa, like, he's a gamer.
Oh.
He does his Twitch streams or whatever the fuck. I don't know. It's a Donnie thing.
That means nothing to our audience.
Oh, that's true. Oopsies.
Oopsies. The people of Van Meter were disheartened. They threw everything they had at the monsters and didn't even slow them down. If their weapons couldn't hurt it, what else could they do? And that's when one of them had an idea. Trap the visitors within the mine. Now, I had mentioned that one of the big industries at the town was a brick factory. Turns out this brick factory wasn't very far from the mine shaft. With the sun now fully in the sky, the men knew what they had to do. For hours, they worked to brick up the entrance to the mine. And once the last piece was in place, they waited. 1 a.m. rolled around, but unlike the previous nights, no visitor appeared. They had done it. Creatures were trapped, and the town was saved by the monsters who actually didn't hurt anyone.
Mm-hmm.
Ever since that fateful night, there have been no confirmed sightings of the Van Meter visitor. But the mark it left on the town is undeniable. A book written on the subject titled "The Van Meter Visitor, A True and Mysterious Encounter with the Unknown" by Chad Lewis, Noah Voss, and the aforementioned Kevin Lee Nelson has done a lot to keep the legend alive. If you read an article on the Van Meter visitor, chances are this book was one of their sources. Further, the town itself seems to embrace the legend wholeheartedly. And perhaps taking a note from Point Pleasant, there's even a Van Meter Visitor Festival. It includes walking tours and presentations from different paranormal speakers. Dude, imagine if we got invited to speak at that.
Wouldn't it just so cool? Happens that one of our listeners is at this thing.
They're like the town manager or something. Oh, that'd be so fun. If any of you have any positions of power, please help us. Help us get famous.
Yes, please help us.
But thus ends the tale of the Van Meter Visitor. All that's left to do now is to answer the question, has Vex the town of Van Meter ever since that night in 1903? What was the visitor? Our first theory is going to be a bit of an odd one. Is the visitor an extraterrestrial? This theory was proposed by one John B. Wells on the famous paranormal slash conspiracy radio show Coast to Coast AM. More specifically, he believed that the creature was actually not organic, but rather a machine sent here by aliens to explore and research the planet. Now, I'm a bit conflicted on this theory. On one hand, it makes a certain kind of sense. It explained the odd light on the creature's horn. Plus, we did the same thing when we explored planets. Not us, I mean like humans. Like, we're not going anywhere. But this thing could just be a way scarier, more badass version of a moon rover. And if the visitor was a metallic being, I guess it would explain the metallic sound Mr. White heard, as well as his seeming resistance to bullets. On the flip side, I feel like this creature just has an organic look to it. Like, the wings were described as similar to a membrane. It would almost resemble a bat's in that way. Plus, releasing gas as a defense mechanism seems like something an organic creature would do. Like, plenty of creatures in nature use gas to defend themselves.
Like skunks.
Yeah. Any thoughts on this theory? Do you think it's an alien?
I don't think it's an alien. I don't. I think it's something more organic. I do believe in aliens. I just don't believe that this thing is an alien.
We'll get to aliens at some point. I covered a UFO before on this podcast. They're always fun.
Fairmont Vegetable Man.
Oh, I don't think we have enough for an episode on that.
No. That's like a segment.
About to do like a group. Our next theory, posited by Kevin Lee Nelson, is that the visitor is something referred to as an ultra-terrestrial. Now, this would probably need some explaining. Ultra-terrestrials, to the best of my understanding, are creatures that are native to Earth, but are from a different dimension or reality. The idea was pioneered by one John Keel, the author of the Mothman Prophecies, and he actually thought Mothman was an ultra-terrestrial. Nelson himself even compares the Van Meter Visitor case to the Mothman directly. I guess his theory kind of works, but it still presents some problems. Namely, the big thing ultra-terrestrials are known for is phasing in our reality. Dimension hopping is supposed to be their main thing, right? But we know the Visitor lived in a hole. It didn't evaporate into the ether or bamf into the shadow realm. It would fly back from its bender and go to a big hole in the dirt, hang out with his kid, and fuck around until it was night, because I guess the sun hurt its hangover migraine. I don't know. On the flip side of that, something that walks between reality shouldn't be stopped by, what is it? Oh, yes, bricks.
Right.
Like, that just seems like a weird...
Like, wouldn't he just go to his other dimension and then come back in a different spot?
Unless there's bricks there, too. The rare interdimensional brick.
The upside down. It's Vecna.
Have they tried just bricking him up? Think about it. Just brick up the fucking house. And the upside down. He can't leave. Checkmate. Hire me, Duffer Brothers.
No, you know L has to scream, and then that's how the whole show will end. It'll be, and it's done.
Every season ends with her screaming and pointing her hand at something. Our third theory is going to come from yours truly. What if the visitor is, in fact, as you suggested earlier, a living dinosaur? Now, I take it you are familiar with pterodactyls. What you might not know is that they're part of a larger family known as pterosaurs. Or pterosaurs, I might be saying it wrong. One particularly large specimen from this family that I think would be a perfect candidate for the Van Meter Visitor is the Pterosaur Quetzalcoatlus. And I'm just gonna pull it up.
I would like to point out that when I said it's like a pterodactyl earlier, I don't see the scripts ahead of time, so I didn't know that Harmon was also going to tell me that he potentially thought it was a pterodactyl.
Yeah, here's a picture of the Van Meter Visitors, an illustration of it.
He's cute.
Yeah, I know. He's. I don't know what the fuck the geometric shape is, but
I don't know. He just looks like a little happy boy, though.
And this is actually going to be a life-size model of a Pterosaurus Quetzalcoatlus next to a human for comparison. I just want to get your real-time reactions to this.
Jesus.
The thing's huge! I'm going to put this on Twitter, but it's so big.
The beak is, like, terrifying to me.
The beak alone is bigger than a man.
Yeah, I don't like that.
And you know what? I take back everything I said. If I was in the 1900s and I saw this out my window, I'd probably shoot it too.
I don't think I'd shoot it. I think I'd shit myself. Yeah. I think I'd be like, oh, fuck. And that's about it. Zoinks. It's just done.
Absolutely massive. This thing has a 36-foot wingspan and can weigh up to 550 pounds. It is a flying nightmare. Plus, the settlers wouldn't have a big reference for what this thing was. The first pterosaur fossils, Pterodactylus, were discovered in Germany in 1784. But were not exceptionally well known, even in 1903. However, the Quetzalcoatlus was not discovered until 1971. So its existence would have been unknown to even the most educated residents. I don't like the idea that something that big used to exist and it could go airborne.
It's a bird. It's a plane. No, it's the Van Meter Visitor.
Your next question would be, what is a pterosaur doing in 1903 Iowa? There could be a few explanations. Time warp or a time slip dropped some unfortunate critter from the prehistoric era directly into the 1900s. Maybe it was a Jurassic Park style experiment? Although I guess the time period is a little early for that. Genetics were still like a new discovery at the time. However, remember, the visitor was living inside a mine. So tell me, Jessica, are you familiar with Hollow Earth Theory?
I am not familiar with Hollow Earth Theory.
Ah, okay. The idea was first brought to prominence by one Edmund Halley, the guy who Halley's Comet is named after. In 1692, he proposed that the Earth was made up of about four levels and three shells. Each layer was sustainable with its own atmosphere. The idea was expanded upon in 1818 by one John Cleve Simmons, who theorized that these deeper layers hold fauna and flora completely new to mankind. However, most people probably know it from Jules Verne's classic novel, Journey to the Center of the Earth, which featured an expedition deep underground that revealed previously extinct creatures still alive and well. This isn't even the only supposed report of living pterosaurs in Iowa. The following is an encounter pulled from livingpterosaursinamerica.com, with a witness who claims to have seen the creature in 2014. Would you mind reading their account? Just read from here to the next big gap.
I saw a creature here in Iowa that looked a lot like your dinosaur. I'm a minister here in Iowa, and I have for years been in homeless shelters and worked with people in addictions. In the early summer of 2014, I was working at a mission-type program called Teen Challenge in Colfax, Iowa. In the afternoon, as I was driving him home, I looked out my driver's side window, and out over a cornfield, a fourth of a mile out, I saw a large bat bird-like thing trying to fly. It would flap its wings, gaining some air, and then try and glide. It was a very windy day, and this creature kept gaining a little height and was then pushed down to the ground by the wind. It was too heavy to fly. I caught a glimpse of its body. It had a long lizard snake-like body with a long tail. I would guess it was 6 to 8 feet long with a 12-foot wingspan. Its face looked a lot like a Komodo dragon's face. It was gray, black, and I don't drink.
Always a reassuring thing to hear.
I have never done drugs. I'm in perfect health. I was shocked.
You know, you can know that's the point where someone makes a face. Yeah. Where he just randomly goes, I don't drink.
I don't drink.
I have never done drugs.
I promise I was not on acid. More recently, I've been working with a new client, also from Colfax. He shared that he was from that town. In the spring of 2014, at around dusk, he had been driving friends into Colfax when his daughter and one of his friends had started yelling at him to turn around. They had spotted a winged dinosaur that was trying to fly. He did not believe it and kept driving. Every time he drove by that spot, his daughter would bring it up. This was within a half mile of where I saw the creature.
Thank you. So, yeah, we have a history of dinosaurs in Iowa.
Strange. Do you think it's the same thing, though? Like, he's not sitting in one town, is he?
I mean, I don't know. How far could it go? Because it seems to have, like, a routine.
Yeah, and also, I don't know if it ever could have gotten itself out of the mine.
I guess maybe if it could have connected somewhere else, but...
Or if the bricks broke down over the years.
But hey, it could just be the same creature of the different... Same, different, Jesus, it could be a different creature just from the same species.
Maybe.
Is it possible that this mine connected to one of these hollow earth shells? That it could have released a creature from the ancient past? Did life find a way? Now, there are admittedly some issues with the theory. Most notably, hollow earth theory is bullshit. There's a lot wrong with it, but I hope it goes without saying that the earth isn't layered like an onion with secret worlds buried within. Even if it was, the mine in Van Meter only reached about 200 feet. The deepest mine in the world, I should have looked this up, Mongping Gold Mine, reaches about 4 kilometers into the earth and has never found any dinosaurs. On top of that, Iowa is surprisingly bare of prehistoric fauna, as it spent most of its time as an ocean back then. You can find fossils of sea creatures, but not many in terms of large land or air-dwelling creatures. So if dinosaurs did manage to escape extinction underground, it would still be unusual for one of them to appear in Iowa. Thirdly, that darn light on its head. The strong, spot-like beam used to scan around throws a big wrench into things. It's just weird. The best guess I can come up with is that maybe it's a form of, like, bioluminescence. You know, like, creatures that can just produce light, like, anglerfish. The really scary thing from Finding Nemo. Gave me nightmares.
Yeah, they are scary.
And maybe it could develop that over centuries of living underground? But even then, I don't know any creatures with just huge spotlights strapped to their faces.
But coal mining helmets have spotlights on them most of the time. What if this creature is just, like, living in the mine and he, like, fell on it or something? Now it's stuck in his head and he can't control it. It's just, like, lighting up. I don't know.
That's adorable. That's an adorable image.
What if he just found the hat and he's like, oh, this is cute. I can use this. I don't know. I don't know what he's like. He doesn't want to hurt anybody, apparently, so...
He looks like a good boy.
He does.
And finally, there's always that ugly little possibility every cryptozoologist has to face. It could all be a hoax. Now, I personally find this unlikely due to how many of the witnesses were businessmen who lived and died on their reputations. There's also the fact that you can still visit the brick factory that supposedly supplied the instruments of that Akasco Amontillado-style execution. However, I would be remiss not to at least mention the lack of physical evidence. The bricked-up mine shaft itself has never been located. Neither have the supposed footprint plaster molds. Could it all have been manufactured, perhaps by some savvy con man or simply the overactive imagination of bored locals? Who knows? But thus ends the story of the Van Meter Visitor. And Visitor is a fitting name, because it is, if nothing else, an outsider. It was but a fragment, a solitary sliver of strangeness that found itself lost in our mundane regular world. A traveler of the odd places sent to remind us that life is more than just what we see. That even now, so distant from the superstitious age of our ancestors, there's still room for such weird and wonderful creatures. things that defy reason and dare us to ponder the ever-shrinking line between fact and fantasy. Was it ever real? Who knows? But I, for one, like to think that somewhere out there, deep in the plains of Iowa, there's an abandoned mineshaft. And for those brave enough to delve within, they will find a single warning etched into the brick wall that reads simply, "Here there be dragons." And that's that. All the facts have been presented, and we tackle yet again that question that vexes and venerates paranormal investigators the world over. Is it real? So I turn the question to you, Jessica. Do you believe in the Van Meter Visitor?
You know, this is the first one where I feel like I've been convinced the whole time that he's real.
Really?
I think he's real, because you also brought up the point. A lot of these people are businessmen. They're, like, thriving on their reputation. And the one guy who saw it was a doctor. I don't want a doctor who sees shit. Like, not that kind of shit. Like, I don't want a doctor who's, like, tripping on acid or something and making up dinosaurs. I also don't really want a doctor who sleeps in his office with a shotgun, but
you gotta work with what you have in Iowa.
Exactly. I mean, it's a small town. What are we gonna do? But yeah, I honestly think there's a good chance that this thing is real. Now, if it's exactly how everyone described it, I don't know, but I think he was there. I think something was there.
I'm about the same. I won't go as far to say as I think the Van Meter Visitor is 100% real, but I do think genuinely something happened in Van Meter, and it is something anomalous, like something out of the ordinary.
Right.
But, yeah, we got another double yes! Woo!
Woo! We did it!
Yeah. But that's going to conclude this episode. I hope you all enjoyed your time, and thank you again for joining us for another season. And thank you again for me being my pod. Thank you again for being my co-host, Jessica.
Of course. Happy to be here.
It was a long day at work. Both of our brains are slowly shutting down.
The place we work has no air conditioning. We're gonna die soon.
And we have to wear historical clothing.
Yeah.
We're gonna die soon.
You know, eventually they're gonna start. These people are gonna start putting together where we work.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, the people we always cross over with have just told people where they work, so it's not too hard to figure out.
No.
Please don't dox us. But if you want to help grow the podcast, I do want to mention that we are now available on Stitcher and Google Podcasts. And I noticed, like, the day we put that up, our views really went up. We used to get, like, one or two a day, then it was suddenly, like, 13, 15. And that's really nice. That's really nice. Yes. And, I hope you all stay tuned. If you want to keep up with updates, you can follow us on Twitter, at The Cryptid Code. And feel free to email submissions if there's any stories you want us to cover. It will be thecrypticcode@hotmail.com.
Ooh, Hotmail.
I'm a boomer. Leave me alone. But for those traveling through Iowa, be safe. Always keep an eye on the sky. And most of all, stay spooky out there.